Emma Sadlier-Berkowitz, the foremost expert on social media law, a regular on our show and many of the shows on the station that has conversations around social media, particularly on our social media impacts on young people. She has co-written books such as Don't Form Yourself, Having Sex and Other Legal Advice for the Age of Social Media, as well as Selfies, Sex and Smartphones, A Teenager's Online Survival Guide. She is in Cape Town, or she has been Cape done for the last day or so, conducting information sessions with parents at a few schools, covering topics like the social media landscape in South Africa, talking about apps, the good, the bad, the ugly, talking about issues around cyberbullying, sexting, cancel culture, and all things that involve social media, digital technology, and how it's affecting particularly young people. Emma, thanks so much. Finally get to meet you in the flesh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's so lovely to be here in person instead of on the end of a telephone.
You have been in Cape Town the last day or so talking to parents, and you run these sessions about parents having very, very important questions around the age of social media and digital technologies. What would be the number one question that parents are asking you when it comes to social media, the phones that we all now have, including youngsters? And of course, there's positives to it, but primarily the dangers around social media.
Yeah, so I speak to parents, but just yesterday, for example, I spoke to primary school, a high school, and a group of parents. And you know, Lester, the primary schools are asking me to speak to the kids from grade 4, which is 9 years old. And these issues that I'm talking about are not very, they're complicated issues. We're talking about nuanced legal issues. We're talking about cyberbullying. We're talking about addiction. We're talking about how these social media apps are changing the way we think about the world. We're talking about fake news. And as you know, there is just a whole range of online harms. I suppose the biggest two issues that I'm dealing with at the moment are deep fakes, even happening at primary school level. I think that the celebrities have been targeted by deepfake, particularly deepfake pornography, for a long time. But what I'm seeing is even in primary school, children turning their classmates into nudes using this AI technology. And the other issue that I'm seeing a lot of is what I call sextortion, which is when somebody obtains private content from you, usually in the guise of being someone they're not, or, as I say, creates deep fake content and then starts extorting you. So to go to your real question, which was what's the number one question, I think the number one question at the moment from parents is, at what age should my child get a phone?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, because I'm not a Luddite. I appreciate the advances of digital communication. In fact, I probably think it's the most important invention, because this little thing that I have in my hand literally has the entire story of humanity, whether you want to talk about Mayan pyramids, or you whether want to find out information of how to do alluvial diamond mining, everything, and also who's dating who in Hollywood, everything is on my phone. So it's a very, very important step that we make in digital communications. But that question, from what age should younger people be having access to literally the world in the palm of their hand?
Yeah, so if I was the boss of the world, which I would hate because I'm actually pretty lazy, if I was the boss of the world, I would make it absolutely illegal for primary school children to own smartphones. And I say that for a number of reasons. I mean, the primary one, of course, is that the internet has no shallow end. Once they're online, they're online. They're coming across the dodgy content. They're coming across the dodgy people. And I see children as young as 7, 8, 9 years old getting very sophisticated smartphones, being on apps like TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, WhatsApp groups. And these platforms are extraordinary and so fabulous if used well, but the children that are getting them at that age are just too young to use them well. And there's a whole range of reasons for that. The most obvious one just being the brain development. You know, your brain is just not, there's a reason we don't give the keys to a car to a 10-year-old. And that is because they're just not, at the point where they're able to make good decisions. So the worst content I'm seeing at the moment, because I often call myself the first responder when things go wrong, is in that age range 10 to 14. And the only reason, Lester, that I believe kids are younger than 13 are getting phones is because of the social pressure. Mm. Because they come home and they say, "Mummy, Daddy, I'm the only one in my grade 6 class who's not on the WhatsApp group, and I'm being alienated or excluded from social occasions because I'm not on this group." And then parents relent because they don't want that to happen to their child. So what it takes, Lester, and this is the big campaign I'm driving at the moment, is for parents to hold out, parents to get together and just say, "Look, we're not going to give in. We are all going to hold out until high school." And it's working. The few schools that have really adopted this approach, it is working, and they're managing to keep the kids younger. They're managing to keep them more innocent. And the other big issue that I suppose I'm being asked all the time is, can phones be banned at school? That's a worldwide conversation. And I spoke at a principal's conference recently of one of the top boys' high schools in the Cape. And he said that they've recently created this locker approach where when kids arrive at school, they put their phones in a locker and they're there all day. And he said to me, "You just won't believe the noise at break time now." Whereas last year, they were staring at their phones all break. Yeah. Now they're actually playing soccer and talking to each other.
I have a six-year-old, and I will admit, we have a spare phone that we've deleted the apps except YouTube Kids. And you have a topical conversation called on what apps to use, and the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the even YouTube Kids, which is age-specific, and I have to put in a PIN code, and I monitor, of course, the time that they use on the phone. But I would hear content coming from this phone, and I would actually have to ask, "But what are you watching?" And then when I take the phone, it is what is appears to be an innocuous kids cartoon. But the level of language used, and I'm not talking like curse words, I'm just talking about the level of adult language being used into kids' content, for me as a parent, is a little bit worrying.
I'm so glad you asked about that, because I find, so I'm particularly passionate. I've got a 3- and a 4-year-old, so I'm particularly passionate about screen time and the effects of screen time on little people. And the advice has changed dramatically in the last few years. It used to all be time-based when it came to little children. So 0 to 2 years old, absolutely no screen time. 2 to 5 years old, accumulatively 1 hour a day. But that guidance has changed, and it's now more about quality of screen time rather than quantity. The idea that if you're FaceTiming your grandparents, that's not the same screen time experience as staring mindlessly at CoComelon. Now, I can sum up literally 20,000 pages of research to you in a few rules. The first is, if it's irritating to you, it's not good for their brain, right? That sort of earworm stuff. There's a wonderful website called Raise Wildflowers, Jerrica Sands, and she goes to all the most popular popular shows, and she ranks them on how good or bad they are for brain development of little people. The second is that your child must be able to disconnect from the screen. So I know that if my child finished watching Paw Patrol, it's a completely different experience to the end of watching Bluey. You know, so you've got to work out what they're able to disconnect from, because it is a drug, right? It is, it's like taking drugs away from a drug addict, if anyone has ever turned off a screen that a toddler has been watching. And the third is, anything that styles itself as educational is a scam when they're little. You know, of course they can learn rote stuff, but they can't, they're not going to learn morals from a screen when they're little. And that's how these companies hook your child and then make them addicted to it, and then they make a lot of money out of it. So that's their whole job, is how to addict the child. But I just quickly, before we move on, I want to say that YouTube Kids keeps me awake at night, because it's user-generated content. So I've seen Peppa Pig self-harm content on there. I've seen Shrek porn. I've seen all sorts of things. So I far prefer, and I do, I'm the first to appreciate that sometimes you just need to put your child in front of a screen. Please, pre-moderated content is so much better. Go Netflix, Showmax, Disney, something that you've approved, because you might have approved what they're watching.
Maybe downloaded, maybe not connect to a network.
Exactly.
Pre-download, so you have vetted.
That's a great idea. And also, you know, the YouTube Kids, you might have approved what they're watching, but a couple of clicks of that thumbnail and they're on a voyage into the underbelly of the internet.
And the algorithm then starts working. On CoComelon, and I'm not trashing any show here, and it has saved me. And the songs, I like to sing The Wheels of the Bus. But I also read a study that said, in terms of content like Kokoman and how you draw in, there was research done that says there's a shot change, a frame change, every something like 2 to 3 seconds, which means it's constant and you're just locked in continuously.
And that the long-term effects of that, we're starting to see, you know, huge increases of ADHD. And it's not fair to say that's the sole reason, of course, but what we are seeing is that the real world becomes grayscale. If you're so used to this fast paced, fast moving, lots of music, lots of color changes. So that's what this person that I follow called Jerrica Sands does, is she works out, you know, how fast do the screens change? How much color change there is? It's an absolutely fascinating area. And Lest, I think, to be honest, what we're seeing is our children are being a little bit used as pawns in the game. While the tech catches up, or should I say the regulation of the tech catches up, there has really been a free for all for a long
time.
Because
that's framing the consequences of a media diet. I've lectured journalism students in television broadcasts, and I ask how many of you watch TV news, and they say they don't, because they find traditional TV news, not in the content but the way it's packaged, as boring. These are young people who've grown up on a diet of instant changes on a screen in front of them, and that has an impact on our attention spans, and that's going to be an impact on how we think critically, how our media is going to be packaged and programmed, and that has a trickle-down effect to how we view our democracy and news and information.
100%. And those morsels, you know, we don't have much more of an attention span than what we can watch in a reel or in a little TikTok video. There are all these studies now about how young people cannot sit through a movie. It's just too much time, too much concentration. But I'm glad you said democracy there, because I think we'd be, we need to mention how important it is going into this hot political climate, into the election time, how important it is to, you know, presume everything you receive is not true until you can prove that it is. Fake news, misinformation, disinformation, you know, social media as a tool in democracy and in elections particularly is something that is... The impact of which cannot be overstated. The TikTok generation and how social media companies have the ability to influence our political views. A real red flag around elections, misinformation, disinformation. It's already started on my phone this week.
we don't have much time, but I want to sketch you a scenario. You have a young person who is maybe in early high school. They have access to a smartphone, so do the children around them. They find that on a TikTok video or some sort of forum, there is a story about them, a lie, a rumor, or there's a targeted campaign against them. And they, as they scroll through, they are seeing that. As the first responder, how does a parent react? Do you go to the school? Do you take away the phone? Do you have a conversation? How do you immediately insulate a young person from the impact of cyberbullying?
Yeah, it's such a fabulous question. So the most important thing, I think, is to obtain evidence, because we live in this very peripheral world. You know, if somebody does a live or they put a story out and then they delete it quite quickly, then it's tricky. So we're lawyers, we love evidence. So I used to always say, take screenshots. Now I literally say, take somebody else's phone and record the content on your phone. Scroll through the messages, play any videos, play any voice notes. For me, that's better evidence, because with AI, we're seeing all these screenshot generators where people can fake any conversation. So get the evidence. Depending on how serious it is, we would either contact the school and give the school an opportunity to deal with it. Unfortunately, a lot of schools are saying to me, oh, we're not going to get involved in stuff that happens outside of school. I don't think it's right. I think that the school has a duty to provide a safe environment for a child. And if they're being bullied, that is an ongoing harm. And it doesn't stop. The child doesn't stop being a victim of that bullying when they walk through the school gates on Monday morning. So I think the school does have a duty to protect. But I do see a lot of schools just being too stretched and not dealing with content properly. The next thing I would do is probably write a letter threatening a protection order, criminal inuria charges, say we're going to sue for defamation unless we get a written apology and undertaking. Mm. And if not, then we'll take legal action because kids they have legal capacity.
I'm going to stretch you for another 60 seconds. We live in a generation currently at the moment where a younger generation of teachers are essentially of the same generation of younger people. So essentially, they're teaching their peers. Your thoughts on the active, it could be an excellent, useful teaching tool, but your thoughts on teachers interacting with students, the learners on social media. I'm seeing a lot of teachers getting onto TikTok nowadays, and some of them very educational, some of them I feel give a little bit too much of their personal lives.
Yeah, straddling that personal professional divide is very, very tricky. Historically, I've always said I don't think that children and teachers should have an online relationship at all. I think that it's just blurring the lines. But that said, social media can be used as an incredible educational tool, and that's where the kids are. So if you want them to listen to you, then that's where you got to go to.
It always freaked me out if I bumped into my teacher in the supermarket and I say, "Miss, you actually real? You actually have a life outside of school?" And probably it's best that we keep that distance. Emma Sadler, you can find on social media at Emma Sadler. You can search the digital law company Emma Sadler. If you want to invite her to a school for an information session, she's absolutely a gem. Emma, thanks so much for joining us. It's just after 8:30.